BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. A major investment firm has said it will review its trial trust fund accounts after Moneybox revealed one young man's £250 investment had all but disappeared when he claimed it at 18. Will Rachel Reeves pump up petrol and diesel prices to take billions of pounds more off motorists? And beware the thieves pretending to offer a solution to the lost winter fuel payments. But first, the government has told Moneybox it will continue to pursue more than 100,000 carers for around £250 million in overpaid benefits, even after launching a review into what it calls the scandal left by the previous government. Carers' allowance is £81.90 a week. It's paid to people under pension age who look after a severely disabled person for at least 35 hours a week. They often take a paid job to supplement that income, but there is a strict earnings limit of £151 a week. If they exceed that by even a penny, they lose their entitlement to carers' allowance, and that can often lead to a large debt. As leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Davey, who cares for his own disabled son, explained to Parliament this week.
There are tens of thousands of carers who go slightly over the earnings limit, mostly without realising it. Maybe they picked up an extra shift or happened to get an end-of-year bonus, or understandably don't realise the way carers' allowance operates in such a daft way. And even though the Department for Work and Pensions gets regular alerts from the HMRC when people go over the earnings limit, they haven't been telling carers and they keep paying carers' allowance. Until one day, out of the blue, the carer gets hit with demands to repay these overpayments. Overpayments perhaps built up over months, over years.
Replying to Ed Davey, the junior DWP minister, Andrew Weston, said he understood the anger at the position inherited from the last government and said the review would look at how to put the system right in the long term. But on the debts, he said the review would consider how it could best support those who have accrued overpayments, adding that the Secretary of State had an obligation to recover them. One carer owing thousands of pounds is Karina. She's a single mother and carer for her 22-year-old daughter who has a rare genetic condition. Karina also works part-time and told us she had no idea she'd exceeded the earnings threshold, sometimes by as little as 50 pence.
I started work at Tesco's and I was claiming carer's allowance, doing 15 hours a week. Thought I was within their limit, claiming their sort of allowances. And 4 years after I was working, I got a call out of the blue from the DWP to say that I had been overpaid. The amount that I was overpaid was £11,000. They wanted it all back. And they take £60 a month off me, which is £720 a year. In the 4 years that I have been repaying it, I've paid back £2,880. I'm delighted that they finally decided to do a review. It'll stop people like me being persecuted and hounded for doing a job that saves the country billions of pounds. I don't believe that they will do anything to help me in my situation. They won't say, right, well, we'll wipe the debt off, but hopefully they will look into it and stop this happening so that nobody else gets to have to pay back £11,000.
With me in the London studio is Emily Holzhausen, Policy Director of Carers UK. Emily Holzhausen, the Work and Pension Secretary Liz Kendall says this review is a big step forward. She wants to learn the lessons. In the meantime, though, her department will continue to collect money from Karina and more than 100,000 others. Should that recovery be paused?
Well, we do think that some of those debts should be written off. As you hear from Karina, so many people are in really difficult situations. But I'm afraid the Secretary of State so far has said that it won't. But we do think this review is an important step forward. I have to say that they are looking into this scandal.
I mean, it would mean writing off £250 million. That would be a lot to ask of the Chancellor, wouldn't it? And, you know, we've been covering this story for a long time, and the reaction we get, and one just this morning, is this is taxpayers' money. They weren't entitled to it. They earned too much. Why shouldn't it be paid back?
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the onus is on the claimant to tell the DWP, but so many people have told us that sometimes they've told the DWP, but they haven't always passed on the information. And as you said earlier, the DWP does receive alerts from the HMRC. Mm. It could have told a lot of these people earlier. And carers are providing at least 35 hours of care per week for people who are very very chronically ill or severely disabled. So they've got a lot on their plate.
Yes, indeed. I mean, £81.90 over 35 is about £2.34 an hour. And that's if you only work 35, which, as you say, many of them don't. At the moment, that £81.90 goes if you earn over £151 a week, even by a penny, moving perhaps from 13 hours to 14 hours a week on minimum wage. It's been called a cliff edge. Should that be softened or removed?
Absolutely. We've just done some research with carers and we found that 4 out of 10 who had earnings had given up work because of that cliff edge. And 6 out of 10 said they'd like to do more. Mm. The problem is the IT system. It is very, there's no good basis to be able to do that.
No, the minister said that in Parliament, actually, didn't he, this week, that a taper, as he put it, is not possible because of those IT issues. He did say that the carer's allowance will rise with inflation in April. That's 1.7%. That's probably, an extra £1.30 a week, less than a first-class stamp, as I often say. And many MPs in Parliament said it wasn't enough. Do you hope the review might recommend an increase?
Well, we will, of course, be asking for that. I mean, we do need these structural things within the benefit to change. The earnings limit could also rise. That would make a difference because it's been falling relative to wages.
So it could be for 16 or 20 hours or something like that they would be allowed to work. How much do you think carers' allowance should be?
Well, we've done some modelling to look at different rates, increasing some of the means-tested benefits on top, but also looking at what it would cost if you equated it with the national living wage, and the bill for that is £5.5 billion a year. So it's quite significant. However, that is what a lot of carers say they would like to see.
Yes, I'm sure they would because they do this work and just remind us how much they save the country by the work they do.
It's staggering. It's £162 billion a year and that is the same value as the NHS.
That's if we paid all of them you might think they should be paid. Now, the DWP said it's committed to working with anyone struggling with these repayment terms. What can Carina and the other 130-odd thousand who are being pursued, what can they do now?
Well, the first thing is if people are struggling with repayments, they should absolutely get back in touch with DWP Debt Management Centre to talk about those payment levels. Anybody who gets a notification of an overpayment must get really good advice, act on it, because there are deductions, which means, and the way that earnings are averaged might mean that you actually do come below that level. So please do get advice. It's critical.
From Carers UK or?
From Carers UK, we have advice to start on the website and yep. We have specialist advisors.
Emily Holtzhausen from Carers UK, thank you. And the DWP told Moneybox the terms of reference to the review and the timeline will be announced in what it calls due course. A major investment firm has told Moneybox it'll take action over the government-backed child trust funds, which it administers, after an investigation by this programme discovered that when one young man claimed his fund at 18, it had all but disappeared. Columbia Threadneedle made the promise after admitting it was, quote, not the outcome we want for any of our customers. I shouldn't think the customers want that outcome either. Dan Whitworth's been investigating and has the details. Dan.
Well, Paul, child trust funds are long-term tax-free savings accounts which were set up by the government in 2002 and they ran all the way until 2011. Now, 6.3 million babies got one, with the fund kick-started with vouchers of £250 for most of those children. Now, the average amount in each fund is around £2,000 and that's because of growth and extra money added to the accounts. And they started maturing 4 years ago when all those babies started turning 18. Now, one big problem, though, is that many tens of thousands of young adults don't even know about these trust funds.
But for those who do, I mean, you say the average is £2,000, they're expecting a useful amount. But that didn't happen to one young man, did it, who's been in touch with you?
Yeah, that's right. So Max Prince, well, he got £250 in a fund when he was born, which matured over the summer when he turned 18. Now, his parents didn't put any extra money in, but they thought it would be worth at least a few hundred pounds. Instead, that £250 had matured into £12.39. I'll give you that one more time. A £250 investment, 18 years, was worth £12.39. Here's what Max thought of that.
It was certainly shocking, to say the least. And I think it's kind of outrageous as well. And I don't know what happened to the money, but it certainly, for the scale that we're dealing with, which was just originally intended by Gordon Brown to be something that would help, you know, future uni students, future adults, just get off the ground a bit, get a bit ahead in life. The fact that it's happened to us, when in the grand scheme of things, it can't be a lot of money for the company, right? It's only around £300. So it is like unfair, in my opinion. And you could say cruel, you could say kind of, it's unexplainable, I think would be the best way of putting it.
So Dan, how does £250 invested for 18 years mature, if that's the right word, into £12.39?
Okay, so caveat, Paul, we all know investments can go down as well as up, but Max's was almost wiped out entirely due to fees and charges, Paul. Now, I've sifted through a lot of documents on this story. Max's mum and dad were meticulous in keeping records. Now, we know the fund had grown to just over £300 by 2012. Then that same money, as from 2013, started getting smaller because of a £30 annual administration charge put on the account, which the family say they knew nothing about.
But I've reported on child trust funds, Dan, since, believe it or not, 2002 when they began. The maximum fee is set at 1.5%. I thought that Max was charged 10% and more each year.
Quite. So we went to the investment firm in charge of Max's fund, that's Columbia Threadneedle, to ask why charges were so high. Now, I actually wasn't administering the account when Max was born, but after a series of industries takeovers, it was when it matured. Now, it told us when the charging structure came into force, letters were sent out to Max's mum and dad, but they were eventually returned unopened. Now, it added it couldn't take any action on their behalf, such as moving the money elsewhere, without authorisation. Now, Max's mum and dad told me, perhaps unsurprisingly, they are unhappy with this explanation and will be contacting the firm very soon to complain. Columbia Threadneedle says it will welcome discussions with the customers.
OK, thanks, Dan. Well, Gavin Oldham is with me in the studio. He runs the Share Foundation, which offers a free government-approved scheme to help 18-year-olds find and access their child trust funds. Gavin, I'll ask you first, what do you make of Max's story?
Well, it's a fairly shocking story, isn't it? But the investment company may not have had the discretion to change the investments out of cash. They certainly did have the discretion to actually get rid of that £25 plus VAT charge per year. And they do have the discretion now to reimburse the whole lot together with a compensation award as well.
Yes, from your voice, I gather you think that's probably what they should do. They did tell us their ongoing duty to the consumer is important. And, you know, we've reported on Moneybox many times about this new consumer duty that all financial firms have to treat people fairly. Has it fulfilled its consumer duty?
Well, I would think not, but it's for the Financial Conduct Authority to make that judgment. And the next step for that family is to go and talk to the FCA about that and to deal with it. Because if Columbia Threadneedle don't come back and do a full reimbursement, and of course, once they do that, it's setting a precedent potentially for doing that for quite a lot of other accounts.
Yes.
Then actually, the FCA would probably take a fairly firm view on this.
Yes, and the Financial Ombudsman Service they can go to if they complain and they're not satisfied, can't they? Now, what happened to Max obviously is dreadful, but at least he knew about his child trust fund. As I said earlier, many young people don't. Is that the main issue now, that people just don't know it's there?
There's an absolute elephant in the room on this issue. There are about 300,000 young people from low-income households. That is the ones who got double the normal amount, and then the older ones got another payment as well as that, who know nothing about their account. We're talking about 300,000 young people in that situation, low-income young people, whose accounts are worth now something like £800 million, so not far off a billion, and they're not being claimed.
What can be done about it then?
Well, I mean, in the Share Foundation, we've been running findctf.sharefund.org for about 5 or 6 years, and we've actually linked about £120 million worth of child trust funds to their rightful owners. But it's very difficult getting through to all of these young people because they are predominantly low-income young people, and they don't read the Times, they don't listen to Radio 4. And And that's one of the challenges. So what we've done is to propose to government that they introduce a scheme which we call default withdrawal at 21 for HMRC allocated accounts. 28% of the accounts were set up on a HMRC allocated basis because the family had taken no action by the time a child was 1 year old. And it is that where the number one problem is. There are, as I say, about 300,000 accounts like that.
And how could they be found? How can you give them this money without them asking for it?
Well, it's very simple, really. The Child Trust Fund is governed by the National Insurance Number. The government, of course, has a relationship with young people as they take benefits. They may earn a salary. They may have student debt. And all of those things link the National Insurance Number, which we could actually very easily set up a process to do that. And the Share Foundation has volunteered to help to set this up.
And finally, Gavin, everyone born between the 1st of September 2002 and the 2nd of January 2011 will have a child trust fund. How can they find it?
If they were born in the United Kingdom, they will. Well, they can find it by going into findctf.sharefund.org. It's a free service. It's on the gov.uk website under Find My CTF as well. So it's no problem.
Gavin Eldon of the Share Foundation, thanks. And I must say, I just searched Share Foundation and found it almost immediately. Email us, listeners, please, about your Child Trust Fund experience. And on Wednesday, Moneybox Live with Felicity Hannah will be looking at children's finances. Maybe you want to save for your child's future but don't know how, or you're worried about letting your child have their own debit card. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk or send a message or a voice note on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. Now, it's less than a fortnight to go before Chancellor Rachel Reeves reveals the tough choices in her budget. They could be getting tougher if reports are right. She's considering saving £40 billion now by tax rises and spending cuts. And the latest in our series of just who her choices might be tough for looks at the taxes on petrol and diesel. Just over half of what we pay for unleaded goes straight to the Treasury, and that's despite a freeze in 2011 and a 5p cut in 2022. Unless she extends them, they will end next year. Moneybox asks drivers in a supermarket car park in Scunthorpe how they would feel if duty went up.
Horrible is the most ridiculous idea going. We're already paying enough.
Terrible. Absolutely dire. We're both retired and every penny counts. He's disabled. He's lost the winter fuel allowance. And it's just going to be even more money out of our pocket.
I'll be able to cope with it, but any increase is not a good thing, is it?
It wouldn't really affect me because I don't do the mileage nowadays. Retired, I just run about town. First I go is Derby, and that's once every 3 or 4 months.
So nice that it's come down and it's now 129, and it's been a lot more expensive. Everything else goes up and that's going to go up as well. Just got to be really careful with your money and not spend it silly. And look after your money.
Don't spend it silly. That could be Rachel Reeves' message to her cabinet colleagues, couldn't it? Well, listening to that is Gordon Balmer. He's executive director from the Petrol Retailers Association. Gordon Balmer, mixed feelings among those drivers. If that temporary cut is ended, that'll be 6p on the price after VAT is added. What will all that cost on a normal trip to a petrol station?
Well, if that is good afternoon, Paul. If that is the case, that's going to be well over £2 that's going to have to be paid extra. And coming at a time when other costs are going up, obviously it makes a difference to household budgets.
Yes, but I mean, the 5p cut was temporary, wasn't it? And that was when oil prices were really rising rapidly. So isn't it reasonable to take it away now they've fallen and are stable?
Well, the government campaigned on a promise not to raise taxes on working people. And unfortunately, raising fuel duty is indiscriminate because it affects costs for working people driving to work and everything that gets to the shops and raw materials. So it could be inflationary and counterproductive to growth. So it's not a great thing, unfortunately.
No. When it began in 2022, that 5p off, which, as I say, would be 6p with VAT, there was criticism by the motoring organisation, the RAC. It wasn't passed on in full by retailers, with pump prices falling 4p or 3p, not the full 6. And I must say an investigation found it generally was passed on. But it's a very common belief, isn't it, that petrol retailers put up prices when fuel prices rise, but don't bring them down quite as quickly when they fall.
Well, our members operate in a highly competitive market on razor-thin margins. So if you actually look at the cost of fuel, you mentioned that over 50% is tax. Our members operate on around 8% gross margin. Now, that gross margin has to pay for all the operating costs of the site, including wages, lighting, business rates, etc. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we are, you know, unduly profiteering from this.
No. So if it does go up, your members will pass it on in full, you're saying?
Well, we have to, because obviously we're charged that by the fuel companies. So, you know, we have no choice, unfortunately.
So, as you say, 56% of the cost goes to the Treasury. If the Chancellor ends these temporary cuts and freezes, what might this bring in extra?
Well, if it's implemented in full, it could be as much as £2 billion back to the Exchequer.
Well, that's the sort of amount that Rachel Rees would like, I imagine. So over £2 billion, so that would be welcome to her. Now, you said it's a competitive market. You're right in the sense that the price certainly varies from garage to garage and indeed from place to place. How can drivers make sure they're getting the best value? If they're listening, they've got to go and fill up maybe today. How can they get the best price?
Well, there's an app called petrolprices.com available from the App Store. That will give you the most up-to-date prices, and I would recommend all motorists download this, put in the postcode that is of interest to them, and it will bring up all the prices of the various forecourts around that locality.
Near where you live, or where you are. Thank you very much, Gordon Balmer from the Petrol Retailers Association. The Treasury told us, perhaps of course, it wouldn't comment on speculation about tax changes. Now, we've just got time to tell you about a new scam that's targeting people worried about their heating costs. One listener got in touch on WhatsApp to tell us about a text they'd received pretending to be from the UK Government Living Allowance Office, offering what it called a living subsidy. Neither of those exists, of course, and this was in lieu of the winter fuel payment, which, of course, most pensioners don't get this winter. Moneybox's Emma Smith is here. Emma, how does this scam work?
So, just a reminder, the winter fuel payment is worth £200 or £300 and used to be given to everyone over the age of 66 until the Chancellor changed the rules this year. It's now only available to people who get pension credit or certain other means-tested benefits. This has been in the news and indeed on this programme recently, and it's now become a scam from thieves posing as the government. There are slight variations, but it comes in the form of a text offering a living subsidy to replace the winter fuel payment. The text then shows a link asking people to update their personal details. This information can then be used by thieves to try and defraud you.
So do not click on that link if you get this text. And it is all lies in that text, I have to say. So, Emma, what should people do if they do get this message?
Well, you should definitely ignore it. If you want, you can report it by forwarding it to 7726, which spells out spam on your phone keypad. This goes to your mobile phone provider, which can block and investigate where the message came from. If you are worried about your bills, it's worth contacting your council to ask about the Household Support Fund, but the criteria and the amount you can get does vary. You can also get in touch with your energy supplier and ask about any grants they might have and any payment plans.
Good advice. Thanks very much, Emma. And I have to say, I've seen several examples now just today of that fake text. So please just ignore it or forward it, as Emma suggested. And, of course, you can treat the Moneybox podcast like your own weekly financial support service, or you can get the news first by listening live every Saturday on BBC Radio 4 at noon. You can tell us all your money and finance thoughts and questions by emailing moneybox at bbc.co.uk. You can also send us a message or a voice note, which we love, on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. We do read them all. You might get on the show. That's 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the reporters were Dan Whitworth and Emma Smith, researcher Joe Krasner, studio manager Adam Dolan. The editor was Sarah Rogers. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, what is going on in Americast?
Hi, everyone.
Hey, that's Mariana Spring. I'm Sarah Smith, and we are a couple of the hosts of America.
And right now, as you might imagine, it's not very quiet over in Podcast HQ. We've been keeping ourselves very busy.
Yeah, because the two of us, along with Justin Webb and Anthony Zerker, are now getting together a few times a week as we chat through trying to untangle all the twists and turns and developments in the US presidential election.
And it'll be fair to say there have been quite a lot of twists and turns already. We've also been chatting a lot about what happens on social media. My favourite topic. If you're interested in US politics, you want to understand what is going on, then I think you might really like our podcast,
which is simply called Americast.
You can listen to it on BBC Sounds.
Until then, we'll see you later.